standing strong while I'm going and I'm striving. I'm relying on myself for as long as I'm surviving. Taking no excuses because your words are just useless. Kick off the dust and let's do this.
Hello, welcome back to Remedy Podcast, A Human Awakening. That is what we're calling it, right?
I think
officially.
So.
Yeah, is that what we landed on?
I mean, we've done it three times, so.
Yeah, but I didn't say it every time, so.
It's implied. It's on the logo.
That is true, yeah. So Google our logo, you'll see. Go to our website, actually, and then it'll put you right back to the podcast so you can continue to listen. It's kind of like a vicious circle that we're talking, an echo chamber, if you will.
Yeah.
Like our last episode. Yeah. So today, what we decided to talk about was the state of events. It's something that Corey and I have talked about. Well, we talk about it all the time because, you know, the state of events is always the state of events. But we've been talking about what is happening over the last months that we've been doing stuff together, talking about current events, talking about what we want to do for our podcast, topics for the podcast. And what we really kind of keep circling around is all the reasons why we're where we're at. So our first three episodes kind of focused on different things that are leading to where society is today. Some of the causal factors, if you want. So if you want to go back and if you haven't listened to the first ones, they're kind of a primer on what we're trying to figure out to do with this podcast, where we want to go with things, but also things like echo chambers that are kind of contributing to stuff, social media, what is happening with all of that. And so when we were discussing what we wanted to do for this episode, that kind of came up. It was like a natural insertion, if you will, to put into the state of events, what is happening today. And I think it might tie nicely into those first topics and what's going on. So when I say state of events, I literally mean what the fuck is going on these days. And I think collectively, everybody's kind of feeling that. Everybody's feeling a sense of angst, anxiety, urgency. So I think Corey and I wanted to talk today about that. Blatantly, where we're at, state of events, what I think I mean by that is we're, what, 2-3 weeks post-inauguration at this point for Joe Biden as president. And so all of the events leading up for the past, let's say, 8 months prior to that, prior to the election, post-election, all the craziness that was happening. I think even a couple months ago when we were talking about state of events, the Capitol hadn't been stormed. Shit like that hadn't occurred. Yeah, that's what we want to kind of dive into today is where we're at, what the fuck is going on, maybe some whys, and then also how to collectively as a nation and maybe even broader as a world steer ourselves out of all of this stuff. Because we got a lot of shit going on. We got a pandemic still happening. It didn't get solved overnight.
No, and depending on where you get your information from, it's only getting worse.
Yeah, that's one of those things where most sources of information are pretty much saying it's getting worse. I would say like the all the media outlets, no matter how they're portraying it, the writing is on the wall and it's not going away, as anybody that had any idea how pandemics work probably could have imagined. Nobody's beating this. And it was funny because as I drove around early on in this stuff, you see all the street, you know, like the billboards that the city has control over, and they type messages of inspiration and whatever the hell they want you to do that week. But locally here in a town called Roseville, they're all over the place. And it early on was like, do these things, beat COVID. And I was always struck with the like realization, we're not fighting the fucking Germans here. You know, like if you donate your cans for the war effort, and when we band together and we can beat the Germans kind of thing, and we'll sit down and have them sign a peace treaty and all that shit. And then when we won, like we can all claim victory. That ain't happening with a pandemic. So there's that. And then what else? What else is going on there?
I mean, I think there's unintended consequences that have become arguably much bigger problems than the pandemic itself. The fact that kids aren't in school in a lot of places, the effect that that's having on their personal growth. I mean, if you really want to dive into the weeds of it, the fact that school was an escape for a lot of kids. They provided meals, structure, you know, for them. How unequipped our education system was to facilitate this transition to distance learning. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the videos of parents and their kids having to sit in front of like public buildings to gain access to Wi-Fi for the kids to be able to actually do the online distance learning.
Right.
You know, things like that.
My thought was the other day, what would have happened if this happened 30 years ago? There wasn't any internet. There was no Wi-Fi. There was no Zoom. There was no nothing. What would they have done? I mean, we were able to
transition. Percentage of the populace would have died and we would have moved on.
Yeah, but no, like, so would they have just let kids continue to go to school, or would you just take them out of school indefinitely and send some textbooks home? Like, well, how would the learning specifically have still occurred?
I think the flow of information, I don't think people were as, I don't know. I mean, 30 years ago, you know, I was still, you know, no, I wasn't shitting on myself still, but
you might have
close to
on those dangerous days.
on a bad day.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's difficult to speculate what that looks like, but I think the flow of information has a lot to do with it. I don't see how you can't think, regardless of what side you're on, that this was a politically charged, you know, event, you know, that being complex and the fact that it's a pandemic on its own, you know, the two-party system here in the States definitely leveraged certain aspects of it to help promote whatever their agenda was.
Sure.
You know, and then the just shit response, you know, from the federal government in regards to what to do in this situation, and whether it's financial aid or it guidelines or structure, you know, I mean, other than probably a 2 week period, I didn't notice much change in anything. There's probably about 2 weeks where it was like, it's like a Monday, you know, like a banking holiday where it's just like, oh shit, there's a lot less traffic. State workers are at home. Right.
Yeah.
Other than that, it seems like business as usual. I mean, with the exception of, you know, having sanitizer everywhere and everyone's wearing a mask and can't fucking understand what anyone's saying. And, you know, being deaf in one ear only makes it that much worse.
Is what? That never gets that old. Joke's never not funny. And sorry to anybody out there that's deaf, but you're probably not listening to this anyways, if I'm being honest. Yeah, podcasts are probably not your thing if you're a deaf person. So sorry. We'll get video up with subtitles soon. It's on the to-do list so we can capture the deaf demographic. But even that kind of shit is a regional thing to kind of like tie into what the fuck is going on. In August of this, in 2020, the year we don't speak about, I traveled because I was taking my daughter up to college. So she's in Washington State, which is northeastern Washington. So she's in Pullman, and 6 miles away is Moscow, Idaho. And the University of Idaho, if I'm saying that correctly, the Vandals, they're there. So those two campuses, Washington State University and University of Idaho, if I think that's what it is, the big state one there, not Boise State, is they're 6 miles from each other. And massive differences in how those two campuses are being run, dorm housing, in-person classes, all that stuff. So my wife and I actually traveled through, we went from Idaho, we stayed in Washington one night as we were traveling, and then we stayed in Bend, Oregon, and we stayed at Hilton properties in all three places, and they all had different rules, like drastically different rules on what you could do. When I'm talking like the pool and the exercise equipment within the structure itself, all Hilton properties, but governed by local entities. And then we traveled this last week, went over to the coast and the coastal communities. And I'm not saying this to be super hugely politically motivated here, but you can tell what kind of community you are, like conservative or liberal, based on their response to what you're doing. We live in a very conservative county here in Placer County. I have never been asked to use the hand sanitizer when I walk into a place. They all provide it. And as much as we've had employees here telling us to put masks on or reminding us, and it's pretty rare here, holy shit, everywhere there was like much crazier. I got asked three different times in restaurants as I walked in, go ahead and use that hand sanitizer. And I'm like, my hands are already sanitized, but okay. You know, I'm trying to be respectful to the employees just doing their job, but
Well, then you add the complexity of you can't get a unified response from elected officials.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and they're supposed to be acting as leaders and guiding, you know, the populace as to what to do. And, you know, first it was, you know, it resided on surfaces. Right. And so everyone was panicking about touching things and how long did it last? And, you know, and I think that the fact that we don't exercise humility into just saying, hey, I don't have the answer to this, but there's common sense solutions to this that we can take action on until we can gain greater information. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, much like one of the big problems is like, let's treat the country like a business. If you started modifying all your policies and procedures and the things you did and didn't do within your business because you had an outlier employee that was, for the most part, problematic or not able to resolve minor issues on their own, or they were manic in their actions, your business would quickly become chaotic if you built everything around them, because the majority of your employees are common sense thinking, like, hey, we can do these things, you know, willing to have discourse and work together on creating a plan. But if the government doesn't speak to those people specifically, and so it's just like, okay, we stop talking to the common sense mind and we talk to them, and we lose a lot of people in the middle, I think, you know, by talking to the outliers.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes back to a welfare state and whether that's good or it's bad, you know, and, you know, the fact that, you know, people don't realize, you know, Social Security in some aspect is a welfare state on the back end.
Sure.
You know, and so it's, if we can't agree on those things, it's how are we going to agree on these more complex dynamic issues?
Yeah. Well, if you're always chasing the outlier, that's an ever-changing thing. And I think it kind of works towards like cancel culture, you know, if we're talking like broad picture on what the fuck is going on here. You have that, you have call out culture, you have cancel culture. Anybody's in danger of being canceled these days because of your views, or even more specifically, views that you may have expressed. You may have said something 20 years ago, and they're pulling up video of it and using it against you to cancel you. It happened to Kevin Hart for hosting the Oscars. It's happened to like multiple people, and that is always changing too. We can all agree that certain terms are not to be used in any circumstances. They're offensive, they're racist, whatever they are. But now all of the microaggressions, things like that, the bar is changing on what is hurtful, intolerable, what is hate speech, what is bigoted, what is sexist. I mean, anything can be viewed towards that. I think of some of the TV shows that I watched as a kid, and none of them could be broadcast now. None of them. Jesus, Brady Bunch, they'd probably come after it for like, I don't even know. Having a maid. Like, that's fucked up. That's elitist. You know, those people had like whatever her name was, the maid.
I have no idea.
You don't.
I came after the Brady Bunch.
You son of a bitch. You are that age, huh? So all the things I'm going to throw out here are probably Sanford and Sons.
Nope.
What was the Three's Company? That was like hugely controversial even at the time. But the God dang it, what was his fucking name? Rob Reiner was in it. He was the son, Meathead, and somebody message in the comments. They'll figure it out. They know exactly what I'm talking about. It's it's Archie Bunker was the dad. I cannot for the life of me. But oh my God, that was incredibly hostile show. There's no way that stuff could be like Dukes of Hazzard. That got canceled because of the fucking General Lee.
Yep.
And stuff like that. I mean, it's a never ending thing of all of this. And so this pandemic comes at a space. One of my family members, I think it was my cousin, asked me, you know, like, why do you think the pandemic stuff is happening right now? And I said, I think it probably happened at a time in our culture where we're the most fragile. I'm saying, like, because I know we'll have international listeners, we are that good. We as Americans, we're in this fragile state. And I know there are certain countries that are Western aligned and are in a very similar space, but we've become so fragile to everything that we were already afraid of everything. And now this thing is way more nefarious because you can't see it. You can't align against it. Nobody knows what the fuck is going on. First, like, it came out and said, don't bother wearing masks. They don't work. Now it's like, don't just wear one mask, wear two. And like, we from week to week and day to day, we don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah. What store was I at today that said, Please do not enter unless you are wearing a medical grade mask.
What the fuck is a medical grade mask at this point? Exactly. Like, not a single one out there.
I looked at the sign. I read the sign as I strolled on through.
Yeah. Are we talking N95, which has been known from the beginning? That is truly the only one that will like filter out virus level particles and stuff, like medical grade. So now I make a company sewing these things up and I call them medical grade, or I sell them from a medical shop. Like, yeah, again, it's so ridiculous in the application of stuff, and you can't even get experts to agree on any of this stuff. I'll throw out there, again, not to be political about stuff, but I heard it on a talk show recently, a local talk show. This has been happening long enough now for them to do studies so they can track compliance with masks. It's been known for a long time, wear masks. And whether you agree on it, whether you don't, there's enough societal pressure. I personally would not wear a mask early on. It was just for a lot of reasons, but maybe to be a contrarian more than anything. But I just really just didn't do it. And I don't believe in the science behind it. I don't believe in the effectiveness of it. People were putting t-shirts around their neck and all kinds of other nonsense and stuff. So that's what I chose to do early on. And now it's been so uncomfortable in so many situations, and the societal pressure that is put on me, up to and including possibly not being able to fly and stuff like that. I'm like, look, I'm not here to make other people's lives miserable. I don't want to get in arguments with employees that are just trying to do whatever they can to stay open because of the governmental controls on them business-wise. So I'm like, I'm not trying to start a revolution here over a goddamn mask. So I just wear it as much as I need to go in and out of stores and stuff. However, very early on, I don't remember, I had a point in there. Like it just went, poof. Yeah. It was just fucking gone. that's crazy how that thought just vanished. It just really, honestly, one of those things where you go like, are these things? Oh, that's what it was. Compliance wise, we've been doing the mask thing now for quite some time, and they've done compliance checks. They monitor closed circuit video in very populated places. I'm thinking like train stations, bus stations, or airports, wherever the fuck, like stores. But even like New York and LA have huge camera infrastructure from police and all kinds of other stuff there for surveillance purposes. And so they know what the compliance rate is. You count 1,000 people and how many are wearing masks. And it's like 97 to 98% compliance or better than that for the mask stuff. And here we are into a huge other wave of this stuff. So if the masks were working, what the fuck? Used to be able to say, well, nobody's wearing masks. And then it was large gatherings. And then it was, well, the holidays. Everybody got together for Thanksgiving and they weren't supposed to. All these things that they keep blaming it on, it's like, no. And it's so if you weren't wearing masks, then that's why it was happening. Well, now damn near everybody's wearing masks everywhere. What's still going on? And again, it's a virus. So we don't know. And so I think to my bigger picture on that was the fear. It's the fear of everything. We have become a nation that is afraid of everything. And I again, my cousin, she owns a hair salon, so she's been hugely affected by all this stuff in the state of California. And because of what has happened to her business and the governmental controls on it and the absolute apathy for her business from the government, she went from probably pretty far left-leaning to extremely right-leaning. I mean, I think she's even attended a couple Trump rallies maybe, or really wanted to. And to watch somebody make that much of a mental shift in stuff because of what's happening to her and her family and her business that she's worked for. I think she's been in business over 20 years. And she posted something on her page about like, let's do indoor dining again. Since we all had a lovely outdoor dining experience last week, where there was a,
you mean the indoor outdoor,
the indoor outdoor, because all the things were blowing in on us and people were getting beamed in the head by like the curtains with metal rods hanging out there from the bottom, like that's blasting people off there. Yeah. One of them was caught on fire because it was hitting the heaters up in the ceiling and melting. And like the wind event that we had here last week was crazy. I like the most wind I remember in a very long time. And these poor tents that have been outside, you know, for everybody to dine in and gather, they're getting thrown down the street and things are, it was crazy. And so Corey and I and another buddy had some, a business dinner, if you will. We almost all died. It was so terrible. And so my cousin, like, you know, posted something about indoor dining. somebody else that has a child that is immunocompromised was like, this can't happen. And like this huge Facebook tirade about this stuff. And I usually don't get involved in that stuff. And I simply said, if you don't want to go do that stuff, don't. Like, but why are the rest of us doing this? And my analogy to this was, look, my daughter just recently drove from California up to Washington. It's about a 15-hour drive, let's say. She's never driven anywhere that far. Like, I think about an hour and a half is her top, like, distance driving. It's in the snow. There were snow conditions. It was cold. Like, this is a big undertaking for a 19-year-old girl. And I'm not happy about it. I'm not pleased this is occurring, but she's also an adult. She needs to get back to school. So I can't hold her hand forever. And so my response to that was she drove up there, and I was worried about it pretty much the entire time because it's a big novel event for her. But I didn't demand that everybody else get off the road in the meantime. My daughter's driving, and for her safety, all the other drivers need to clear the roadway until she gets there. Because, okay, well, let's say I could make that happen. Then what? I got to make sure that there's no snow conditions. I'm going to go ahead of her with a snow plow and make sure that like there's no freezing ice or anything like that. Like, where do we stop with the scared stuff?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard, you know? So it kind of goes back to the topic of confirmation bias, echo chambers, right? You know, the impact that social media is having on our lives, where I think there's a lot of people that feel disenfranchised. And when they find a person or a group of people or a message they can align with, they attach themselves to that, and they put everything they have behind that message, even if it's not a true representation of who they are, because they feel like they're being heard, you know. And I think that's important, and it goes back to having conversations with people. It goes back to having meaningful relationships, you know. Having a relationship with Ashley and other friends, I don't feel compelled to take to the internet to have my voice heard. I can have a conversation. Doesn't mean that everyone's saying, oh, that's the greatest idea and you're 100% right, you know. But I'm able to express those thoughts and feelings in a way that allows me to get some form of, you know, resolution to whatever it is that I'm feeling, or help me gain greater information to decide whether I want to further continue that thought process. And I think that that is only amplifying a lot of the problems we're having, you know, where my mom's immune compromised and she is literally the subset of the populace that this whole thing is designed for. And what does that mean? That means I've seen her 3 times in a year. You know, that means that when everyone was buying up all the shit tickets that I would, when they thought it was, you know, it was,
toilet paper for those of you
you know, that my parents wouldn't go to the grocery store, you know, things like that. And so I would buy food for them, put it in ice chests, and leave it in their garage. They wouldn't touch it for 5 days because they were worried that they would, you know, get some type of contaminants on their hands.
Right.
You know, I mean, and I'm not trying to be an asshole or be insensitive to the complexity of this problem. And I've had it more recently. I've had a close people that are close to me with family members that have passed away from COVID, you know, or complications related to having COVID. So I'm not trying to be insensitive to it, you know, but the fucking irony, you lost me when Starbucks was able to stay open.
Yeah.
You know, things like that, where it's just, it doesn't pass the common sense test.
Right.
You know, the fact that you literally can make my food, but you can't hand it to me.
Right.
Like this, what the fuck are we doing here?
Right.
Right. You know?
Yeah.
And so these half-assed solutions, I think, create unintended problems. They cut out people, leading them to feeling disenfranchised, and then they have to align themselves with another idea or thought to counteract that. And you know, it's next thing you know, it's everyone's just throwing shit at each other, you know, and trying to get their message to be heard, and we're no longer talking. And I think that's unilaterally true for a lot of the issues that we're facing. And so you have the strong political polarization. You have the far left and you far right. I think there's a lot of people, the moderates, I think the people in the middle that just want what's good for their families and for what's good for the community. Those people aren't being heard. They're not the people that get the views, that it's not clickbait material. So therefore it doesn't facilitate the narrative of capturing people's attention. I think you have the the people that you should wear a mask and you shouldn't be able to go out. And then you have the anti-maskers, right? You know, and then you have the anti-vaxxers now with the vaccine and stuff. And it's just like, it's these two teams, right? It's like, I mean, what's a good like NFL rivalry? I gave up on the NFL, you know, back in the day when the 49ers and the whole Kaepernick issue.
Right? Yeah, yeah. The Niners and the Cowboys would probably be a historical one.
Right. So it's, you know, so you have, it's either you're a Niners fan or you're a Cowboys fan, right? No one gives a shit about the people in the middle.
Yeah.
Even though that's the majority. Yeah. And so, and everyone's just kind of sitting back watching this feud, you know, and at what expense is this coming?
Yeah.
You know, to where... Are we really making progress? And I think there's in a lot of sectors of, you know, public and private sectors, you know, we are making a lot of progress, but that's not getting any attention. And so we don't get that affirmation of that there's good taking place. We just hear about the bad, you know, and it's, I don't know. I think it's going to take conversations like this. And then on a small level, on a local level and a state level, to where we can try to regain some form of normalcy, you know, that, hey, like, it's not all bad. Like, there's bad shit happening, but there's always bad shit happening. It's whether you want to pay attention to it or not.
Right.
You know, human trafficking, things like that. It's, there's fucked up things that are happening that affect people far more, you know, and if we really wanted to solve problems, we'd get rid of the fast food, right? I mean, the thing that I struggle with, I'm curious what your opinion is, we haven't talked about this, is... this is like one of those few times where we're being forced to be healthy, you know, and I find that very interesting where you can buy alcohol without issue, without concern. You can go drive to an establishment and purchase nothing but alcohol, something that's going to compromise your ability to operate that motor vehicle and send you on your fucking merry way. Right. And I mean, how many people die from, you know, manslaughter or things like that, or DUI related accidents?
And as you were talking through some of that stuff, one of the things that struck me was, again, we don't want to be insensitive to a pandemic that's killed, like, what is it? Were we over 400,000 or are we over 500,000 now?
I honestly,
it's a lot. I think it's over 400 and could be over 500. I try not to just like watch the statistics daily, but it's a lot. And it's obviously been ramping up over the past couple months as well. So it's not an insignificant thing the way that we thought it was in the beginning. Like, maybe it'll be less than SARS was back in the day, or bird flu, or all these different things, swine flu. It's become a worldwide pandemic that's killed a lot of people. Nothing like the Spanish flu 100 years ago. But, you know, we're a more progressive society now worldwide. We have different medical treatments and stuff. But back to the whole thing about being fearful and being conditioned to be fearful now. We have all become afraid of this thing. And that whole SARS thing, what was it, been like 10 years ago or so? I don't think we were in this same mental space. It wasn't like this panic set in over this. This happened really fast this time. And yet... we don't panic about things that have always killed hundreds of thousands of us, to your point about being healthy now. Cancer, heart disease, and which are all linked to obesity as well, and diabetes. If I'm going to just throw out four or five things right off the top of my head that are massive killers of human beings in the United States, and we'll put out automobile accidents in there as well. Those things kill a lot of people every year, probably well over a million. Don't quote me on stats. Don't anybody fucking Google me and fact check me and shit like that. I'm throwing out numbers out of my ass right here. But it's a lot of fucking people every year, a lot. And our numbers in the COVID might be approaching one of those numbers. If I just think back to just rough statistics, heart attacks, heart disease related things probably kill about the same amount of people per year that COVID has now killed. And we all fucking eat like I just ate Taco Bell yesterday. Don't anybody tell Liz. I just did it. Like, we all eat as though that doesn't bother us. What I think has happened, that which is truly frightening for people that death is not a reality for them, is that this has made it plausible that you could die because of your lifestyle choices. Because it is specifically running rampant in people that have underlying health conditions. As I sit here and look at my friend and he looks at me, and neither of us are the picture of health. We're not in the age bracket, but health-wise. And so if Corey was to pass away from it, and everybody would say, like, COVID took him, that's horrible, that's terrible. But I think he'll be the first to admit, Well, he's not the healthy specimen that he knows he should be and wants to be. And so if he died, it would just be because COVID got him, not because the last 10 years of his lifestyle choices led up to him being more susceptible to a virus that is targeting people that have underlying, so comorbidity type things. Same with me. I appear to be healthy. I assure you, I'm probably not the healthiest person out there. Like, my blood pressure might be a little higher than it should be. Like, again, many, many years of poor living and poor eating and poor sleep habits have probably led to my body having more damage done to it than somebody else my age. And so you look at that, and I think we're all faced with the reality of, like, shit, I should have got my stuff together, because now this virus might get a hold of you and you might not make it, and you might struggle, and it might just lay you out, or it might have all these lasting effects that people are experiencing. And it's not happening in any significant number to truly healthy people. But yet with cancer, with diabetes, with heart disease, we can sit there and shrug that off for another day, and it's not so in our face. And there's probably a couple reasons for that. Like, the industry that feeds off of that will never come out and say, like, hey, let's all agree that Mountain Dew is really terrible for you. As much as I love Mountain Dew, and it just pains me to say that statement, it's really shitty for you, right? And so that industry that profits off that, and fast food industry, and all of these industries, they're not going to sit here and go, yeah, we've known this all along. Our food,
any form of processed food. It doesn't have to be, you know, the extreme of a,
yeah,
you know, a Burger King or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, so, I mean, COVID's one aspect of it, right? But then you have, I mean, the mental distress that people are under, you know, advocating for their political affiliations, things like that, mm-hmm. you know, and I mean, I can't remember a more contentious, you know, election cycle, you know, that we've ever gone through.
Yeah.
And, you know, the impact that's had on families, you know, I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of like when you, you throw a rock into a pond, you know, it's like how far that small amount of energy, how far it ripples, and it continues to go on. And,
yeah.
and that's only what you see on the surface. It's greater underneath, right? You know, and so
it's. But what happens when, like, that's a great analogy, the pond thing, but what happens when people are throwing lots of rocks in there? Or think about, like, wakeboard boats. When two boats are going along, those wakes, what happens when those wakes are colliding? You see it at the ocean when a wave going out off the beach hits the wave coming in. It's amplifying that stuff. So it's not just as simple as one rock thrown in there with the ripples from that one rock. We now have thousands of rocks being thrown in this pond and the intersection of all those ripples.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's hard too, because you might see someone responding, you know, literally or figuratively to whatever it is that they're being faced with. Mm-hmm. And then you immediately respond to how they're responding to that situation without having any contextual understanding of what's going on, you know? And so that it just goes back to, you know, having conversations, listening to people, you know, putting thought into why you feel the way you do, and testing that against, you know, people that you value their opinions. But also, going back to our last episode, is sitting down and having a conversation with someone that has opposing views on a topic, you know. And it, you know, while I would recommend that it be in person, you know, I mean, if you're worried about interstitial interactions, right, you mean, you know, a phone call or something's better than nothing.
Sure.
You know, but I mean, so what have you done for yourself to help not fall victim to everything going on, like the chaos? Like, how have you been able to still manage, operate your business, to maintain a healthy relationship with your wife, to maintain personal health and mental health, you know, throughout this?
For me, really, that first and foremost, it's not buying into the fear. I'm not a fearful person anyways. I just don't live that way. I grew up around it. My grandmother was the key to that. She was the type of person that was super like, when we were camping up in the Redwoods, no bullshit, we had a bear in our camp, and she, like, opens the trailer door and goes, just gonna scare it off with pots and pans, and go out there and, like, confront a bear. And then the next morning we're all sitting there chatting, and she's like, she was worried all night, like, couldn't sleep well thinking about a redwood falling on our camp. And it's like, that's the two extremes. And I grew up with that as an example of life. And it was, and thought, Well, that's a hell of a way to live, worrying about things that you have no control over, where this fucking tree's gonna. But you're not afraid to go out and confront a damn bear in our camp. So I saw those two like polar opposites within one person that I cared deeply about. And maybe that helped shape me, but also 20 plus years in law enforcement of I've seen the worst. I know what's there. I'm not afraid of dying any more than the next person because I'm aware of the reality of it, that I might wake up dead tomorrow, you know, because my heart caught me, or the randomness of the world. So that's part of it, is not living in fear of all of this.
If I can, I want to ask you, so earlier you made the point of, I don't want to phrase this, you made the point of basically our quality of lives are higher than they've ever been.
Yeah.
You know, and that's historically true.
Sure.
And we've basically become weak in some form, sense, or complacent or comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. Yet here you have in your own personal experience being a law enforcement officer, you know, being confronted with the other side of the coin on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Do you think that some of these problems, other than how we already talked about, are being amplified because we're losing perspective?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at no point in history has it been easier to be alive than right now. And so we don't have true hardship in our life. So I think it's a multi-pronged issue. We don't have a lot of hardship in our life anyways. Tragic things are going to happen to people, but they're usually pretty isolated. You know, you might hear that one guy that like all the bad stuff happens to him, right? But for most everybody else, you're just going to have these things that come in and out of your life. They're hardships, they're moments in time, the death of a family member, or something like that. But those are things that we all expect to come from daily living. Very few people deal with the loss of their child. That would be an extraordinary thing to happen, and an extraordinary trauma and a bigger than normal strife in your life. So we don't have a lot of that. We don't have to worry about where our food's coming from. Even, and I'm going to say this, I don't mean to take anything away from anybody that's struggling to eat and stuff like that. But like if you're poor, like real poor and can't afford to eat, there are a lot of places that'll feed you. Like nobody in America, as much as they want to politicize this whole thing, nobody in America is truly like, I don't know where I'm going to get my next meal. It may not be where you want it to be from. It may not be somewhere really high end and fancy, but you could get one if you needed to. There are a lot of forms of being fed out there. So we live in a very prosperous nation. So the idea that hardship for Americans, it's like, my Wi-Fi is really slow, or I might not have one, or things like that. So that's part of the equation, is we don't, in the last 100 years, we've moved away from true hardship and true trials and tribulations. So we're not being tested daily. We have no, we have nothing to build ourselves. Like if you want to go out and build muscle and get stronger, you have to work those muscles. Your body has to face adversity to grow stronger. And so because our mind isn't facing tons of adversity, we're not getting stronger. We're not resilient when these things do come into our lives. And then the other side of that coin is purposely shielding people from any of the adversity that comes in life. I watched how my family navigated, I have to say this delicately because my mom might listen to it. I just watched how our family navigated the death of my two grandmothers in 2019. They died. My two grandmothers died within 8 days of each other. One was in her late 90s and one was in her late 80s. Maybe even almost, late 80s. And one had been ill for many, many years, and one rapidly declined just over the course of like 2 months, basically. So that's something my family faced. And I watched the difference between my brother, who's in the military, and his kids and his family, how they navigated it, myself, like law enforcement background, and how I navigated it with my daughter and now wife and stuff. And then my sister and how her family navigated it. Much different across the spectrum. And I look at that and go, like, you can't shield kids from that stuff. You can't, this, like, if it's going to be a trial run for death, and I don't want to make this like super morbid, but especially my one grandmother that was in her late 90s, had been married 76 years, I believe it was, like, and it traveled, they did everything. Like, you could not ask more from life, basically, and was healthy as fuck right up until the bitter end. And even her death was like, a quick downward spiral and was able to get out of the hospital and go pass peacefully in her home with my grandfather, surrounded by people that loved her. You can't ask more from life. Death does not get any cleaner and prettier than that. And if we're going to shield people from that event, what happens when something else tragic comes along? What happens when somebody that's closer to those family members gets cancer suddenly or dies of a car accident or the things that come along that are traumatic? That's kind of my point to the first thing about we don't have a lot of adversity, and then how are we handling that adversity? So the adversity that does come into our lives, are we facing it and leaning into it and building that mental muscle as a result of it? Or do we cave to that? And I think if you look at like the broad picture for stuff, for years, we've not let kids feel discomfort. As much as people want to say it and stuff, but like everybody gets a trophy. That's really it's not like so everybody can win. It's so you don't feel the effects of losing. That's not what it is. It's not, we want everybody to win. We actually don't want people to feel like they lost.
Right.
Because losing fucking sucks and it feels horrible. But it's a mental, like nobody wants to lose, but there will always be a winner and a loser. And if you don't know what it feels like to lose and you can't settle into that and go, I hate losing. I don't want to lose anymore. What does it take for me to not feel this? What's happening as a byproduct? Sure, it seems like a noble thing to be like, I don't like watching little kids cry when they lose a soccer game. It sucks. But what do they learn? Well, work fucking harder if you don't like that, right? Like, because the universe and Mother Nature doesn't give a shit about that stuff at the end of the day, right? They're not going to shield, like, life will not shield you from that stuff in spite of all of our best efforts to make life safe and bubble wrapped. Shit will come along and you'll lose a job, you'll lose a loved one, your spouse will cheat on you, like whatever it is that can hit you, calamity, such a great fucking word on top of it. Like, I'll say it again, calamity will come into your life and kick you in the balls whether you like it or not. And so did you do any mental work in your entire life from the time you were a child all the way up to adulthood? And I think like in the broad spectrum of where we're at right now, that's what we're looking at, is people are like, okay, well, I can't handle the fact that this guy is in power for the last 4 years that I absolutely fucking hate. I hate the orange man so badly and his existence. I look at the very famous video now, the night that he was winning the election, and they're playing the people crying in the crowds that were gathering to cheer on Hillary Clinton's win that didn't materialize. And I know you know exactly which one I'm talking about. The lady with glasses, like on her knees screaming. Oh,
she's in a fluorescent yellow puffy jacket. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Like it's an iconic symbol of this didn't go how I wanted it to. And I'm screaming and crying and falling apart. That's maybe the first time in her life
that she's hurt. Not even not winning, but genuinely believing that this is the end.
Uh-huh.
That's the other scary part, is like, how is it binary? How is it this or that, right? You know, and I think as humans, like we want what's best, but I think our arrogance compounded with ignorance is what's getting the best of us right now.
Yeah.
I think the fact that we believe we can engineer what good is, you know, good is learned, I believe, you know, and you know, the idea that we can solve these problems to where everyone gets the net result of what's good.
Well, I think also we have to be careful defining what is good, you know, there was a shit ton of people in Nazi Germany that thought it was good to round up alternate races and ethnicities and Jews and put them to death. Like, they believed that was good. I don't think anybody in modern society should ever feel that way now. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, that everybody can agree that was fucking horrible. But, like, that's the danger of saying what is the measure of good, right? Like, would it be good to say like, okay, so we're going to shut down the schools nationwide because we don't know how this thing's working and we're going to shut it down to be safe for a couple months. And then as we moved through this, we went, okay, well, it's not affecting children, blah, blah, blah. Let's get them back to school. But instead, here we are really close to a year later at this point after the fact, and still no measurable way of getting children back into school. And so now we run the bigger risk of saying, okay, so the teachers could be at risk. Is that better than the children the long-term psychological effects of what is occurring in their learning lives now. Like children, an example, we were over on the coast this week. We went on this little thing called the Skunk Train. No offense to the Skunk Train. Don't pay the money. It's really fucking boring. It's a 7-mile ride out into the forest and back on a train. It's boring as shit. Sorry. But my niece, she's 4 years old. There's a little girl on the train with us that was probably maybe 5.5, 6, slightly older. They're standing next to each other, and they're so conditioned to all this shit, they didn't want to be near each other. And the other girl's mom said, I'm sorry, I hope she's not bothering you. You know, like, I know we're not supposed to, but she's just dying for kid interaction at this point. And it truly broke my heart. Like, what the fuck, man? Like, because also I'm sitting there eating fucking popcorn now, and I can violate the mask rule because I'm eating popcorn because it's allowed. You know, we're like, why are we doing this? Why are we fucking doing that to our children? Like, they're so awkward. They're kind of awkward as it is, kids. But in normal circumstances, they would have been playing within seconds. And now it was this whole fucking awkward dance back and forth about this stuff. And if we keep on that too long, what's the good in this? Is it good to protect the people that are teaching our children? Or is it good to go, we can't fuck up a whole entire generation of kids from every age group in school? Well, like,
yeah, and I don't want to keep throwing problems out this whole thing, right? But it's it's hard not to. But then it's like, why are we putting the solution to these problems on the education system? Why are we deferring the responsibility back to the government or local government, federal government or local governments? A lot of this shit should be being resolved at home. And whatever your comfort levels are, respectively to whatever your issues or potential medical complications, whatever your situation requires, I think that should be the design of your response to what your profession is, things like that, exposure, and allow people to make the best decision possible and to continue to have the conversation and to apply good research and science to help inform and guide, you know, people in making their own decisions, you know, that they want to have. You know, I know my wife and I kind of a shit ton of flack and how we were responding to this. And my son's one of the few kids that's in the Sacramento County area that's in a distance learning program. And so
he already was prior to COVID.
No. Oh. So for when COVID started, he went into distance learning. I forgot. It's called something else. But he actually goes to school 3 days a week, mm-hmm. but he only goes to school half time. And then there's only 6 kids in his class. And so, but they're not allowed to gather. They have to be socially distanced in the class. And he wanted to go just to be able to have the opportunity to, even he has to talk across a couple desks, mm-hmm. to have the conversation with one of his friends.
Sure.
You know, but then it goes back to the fact that he's in school for 2.5 hours on a Monday and then 3.5 hours the rest of the week. What the fuck are we doing with the rest of the time? Right. Like, why are we not just doing Zoom meetings and having, it's difficult for them to sit there. Right. And it's just like, we just keep making excuse after excuse after excuse. And we're going to get back to the point of, well, what the fuck are we going to do? And now the big one is having all the standardized tests, right? The SAT, or I forgot what it's not SATs, but in California.
CATs, CAT tests.
Yeah. So having those done now, and it's just like, well, no, don't give the kids tests, you know, because we're expecting them to fail. Like, they're behind an entire year.
We're acknowledging that our teaching for the last year has been shit. And I'm not knocking teachers. I know they're doing the best they possibly could. My dad was a teacher for 35 years. Fortunately, he retired probably 10 years ago-ish or so. There's no way he could have navigated this fucking thing. And so they're doing the best they can. And they'll all admit to you, yeah, we're falling way short. This is not the way to teach children and stuff. And yet a huge contingent of them, as I understand, refuse to go back to school. If it was like, hey, we want to put all these kids back into school. We have these protocols in place. There's huge union drives to say, we're not. Again, back to the fear. We're more fearful for ourselves than that. And what I would point out on that is, okay, if you're that fearful to go back and teach kids, are you quarantined completely? Are you getting food delivered the way that Corey just described he was doing for his parents in the beginning? Like, what is your level? You're saying you don't want to go back and teach kids, which are they might be able to transmit it to you because they can be asymptomatic carriers, which we won't even go down that with the science that may have shown that's not even happening. Like, again, there's so much disinformation out there. I don't even know what to say out here that people won't jump my ass and go, like, that's not patently untrue because you read something that's contrary to what you just read yesterday, every fucking day. So you go sit and go, Okay. So, well, if you're too afraid to come back and teach kids, then how are you living your life? Are you going out and shopping in person? Are you doing this? Are you doing this? Are you gathering with any? Because if you better be the model isolationist if you don't want to come teach kids at that point.
Right.
Not to be too pointed against teachers. It's just it's an isolated thing. But like, you know,
this which is, I would discourage based off my own experiences for the fact of, you know, the issues that come along with isolation.
Yeah.
You know, and not getting out and, you know, I mean, not getting vitamin D, being in the sun, exposure. It's just, yeah. It's, there's no good solution.
There's none.
And I think it's nuanced. And I think people, you know, should respect and accept that your situation's not mine. Mine's right. Not yours. I'm not trying to project my own beliefs and thoughts on this on you. Yeah. I'm happy to have the conversation if it's important to you or it's right. A relationship that requires it, you know, and
it goes back to that fear thing though, then again, too. My grandfather is the prime candidate for being taken out by COVID. He is 99 years old, just turned that in mid-January. He obviously lost my grandmother a little over a year ago now. Early on, he lives in an assisted living facility. So he has his own room, but they have a dining hall. So when COVID hit, they would not allow him to go visit anybody. If he leaves, they obviously can't tell him he has to stay there. But if he leaves, he couldn't come back. And so my parents aren't equipped to have him live there. So he couldn't visit for weeks. I'm saying they probably didn't visit him for well over 8 weeks in the very beginning. During that time, he also couldn't go down to the dining hall. So he's isolated in his room, having just lost his wife of over 75 years in the last year. He's isolated in his room. He just sits there. Literally all fucking day by himself. And the fear part of it for me is like, I don't want to lose my grandfather. But I'm sure if I asked him, hey, what do you think about all this? He'd be like, I've been prepared for death for about the last 20 fucking years, you know, easily. At his age, it is a reality. In that home, it's a reality. They have people die there all the time without COVID. They've had one or two isolated cases, same thing. If you're going to isolate these people and have them live in their rooms, were you isolating all the workers that are coming in and out? Like, what level are you going to attain? And they're still archaic in their measures on stuff. And we're deep into this. We're pushing a year at this point. And I look at that and go, that's a group of people that will accept the risks of seeing their family, knowing that it could contribute to the deaths of a lot of that population. But I don't think probably any of them are in fear for it. I don't want to speak for the entire populace in there, but they all are in an elderly age that they know that death is a constant reality for them, much more so than us. And I would also probably put out that they're a much more resilient age. But on their behalf, the management is afraid. All of us are afraid. Like, and that's what we're still dealing with is how to navigate that. So
yeah, I think you treat it just like the fear and the responsibility associated with operating a motor vehicle.
Yeah,
you know, you get in the car, you understand, you know, there's associated risk, you have responsibilities, and you do your best, and you try to integrate with the structure, you know, such as the rules of the road, you know, and you try to navigate that the best way possible, and there's going to be situations where it doesn't go as intended. You know, and we have to accept that, you know, but to carry the emotional burden for, we'll just say the United States, 330 million people and to feel the need to have that change. Like, I mean, you're paying a price, you know, that I don't think it's worth it, you know, and it's not for me to say what anyone should do or not do, but I would definitely encourage you to have the conversation with yourself to, am I getting what I want out of this? Am I going to be in a better place, or am I helping those around me that matter most?
Yeah.
You know, because I feel bad for people that are paying a price. I know that, you know, I had some pretty strong views, you know, specifically related to COVID or the political climate and things like that. And I had to, you know, probably about 6 months ago, I had to make a cognitive decision to just not ignore it, but to take a huge step back from the position that I had. And my quality of life went up dramatically, you know, after the fact. And it really showed me that I need to apply that same level of thinking and evaluation in other aspects of my life. And am I getting what I want out of this? Is this meaningful? Is this worth the effort and energy? You know, are these fights worth taking? You know, because in the scheme of things, again, going back to the point I was making earlier, it's perspective. you know, all things considered, you know, how we've had to navigate COVID, you know, in comparison to how other people are living throughout the world, these aren't big problems, you know. And if we all, I think, stopped focusing so much on what our own reality is, and you know, this is my truth, and this is the thing I need to advocate so hardly for, and we work better together or well with others, you know, I think we would be able to accomplish a lot more than just fucking fighting all the time.
Yeah. Because that's really the danger. And staying where we're at, the danger is that we don't move forward. And really, the path that I think we're accelerating on now between politics and COVID and insert whatever else here that we're all deeply divided on, is the danger is we're going to divide even farther. And when those two camps are so far apart that they can't even find a common ground, then where are we at? Some would argue we're in the middle of a civil war already, depending on the severity of it. I could make a really strong argument that when the Capitol gets overrun by people, yeah, we're probably in a civil war at some point. Right or wrong, indifferent, whether I agree with the viewpoints expressed, you just don't fucking storm the Capitol in a civil war. In America, that doesn't happen. It shouldn't happen. I get the reasons behind it. I get the anger and emotion and stuff, but that's not how we handle shit
here. Yeah, it's difficult. It's a different political party's extreme to the young lady that was crying and screaming, you know, yeah, when Hillary didn't win, mm-hmm, to the fucking guy, you know, storming through going, fuck this, I'm going to do what I want, you yeah know, mentality. Right. It's the extremes, you know, and unfortunately, you know, those are the images that are fucking forced down everyone's throats through, you know, conventional media, social media, things like that. And they become the talking point. And it's, again, we lose track of the majority in the middle.
So. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the danger of lingering in this space if we don't learn to just take a step back and start figuring that out. So I think you asked me earlier, I just wasn't quite prepared for the question, but it's a great wrap-up question is like, well, what do we do about it? I think what we really want on this podcast is to not just sit here and debate topics and say like how everything is fucked up and stuff, but what we always want to kind of wrap up with is, okay, so if we lay out these theories and ideas in the course of these episodes, what can we do about it? Because we don't want to just be malingering out there and throw it out there and go, well, you know, that fucking sucks. See yeah you next week. Yep. So how do we move on? How I know that's kind of the question you posed to me earlier was how do we improve this? And how do I go about it? While I was on vacation-ish, and over the last couple of weeks as well, I've been reading a book by Dan Crenshaw, and it's called Fortitude. And Dan Crenshaw is, for those of you that don't know, is a congressman from Texas. He's a former Navy SEAL and then was elected to the House of Representatives for his district for Texas. And so he serves on the U.S. House of Representatives. I have to make sure I say that. There's been a lot of the, like, are you a congressman and is a senator a con? Like all these things. Yeah. And I don't remember that class from sixth grade whatsoever. So I've done some research on it, but that's Dan Crenshaw. So you can obviously, he's from Texas. He's a former Navy SEAL. I don't need to throw out there like what side of the fence he probably falls on. But the one thing I do like about him and the things that I've watched him do, he became well known early on for a skit on Saturday Night Live. Pete Davidson, I think it is the comedian that they did their Saturday Night Live weekend update. It's a very long running show. And Pete Davidson had some kind of like snide remark. He actually had something funny to say. He looked like they were talking about his eye patch because Dan Crenshaw lost an eye to an IED in, I want to say it's Iraq. Don't quote me on that. But in the war where he was serving, and Pete Davidson made a joke about it while Dan was running for his race. I think the joke was he looks like a hitman from a porno, and I was like, that's pretty funny. And apparently Dan even laughed like, yeah, that's funny. And then I think the thing that like got everybody pissed off at Pete Davidson was he made. Followed it up with he lost an eye in like a war or something, I don't know, and was really pretty flippant and dismissive about yeah the fact that this guy lost an eye serving in a war, and people came unglued and were sending it to Dan and lots of stuff. And so the book really lays out where we're at, what's happening, kind of was the perfect topic and perfect thing to finish up right before this podcast. And a lot of Dan's ideas and solutions on it. The thing I like about him a lot is, while conservative, he freely admits that. Obviously, like I said, he comes from Texas and he's a former Navy SEAL. Like, probably not liberal leaning. He is way more measured in his responses and stuff. He is not that person out there that's like inflammatory on the right. And that's what I like about him. He's very measured. And so his response to that thing on Saturday Night Live, he didn't really have one. He just had a response that was like measured. And he understood that that comedian's trying to be funny and light. And the way that he came across was this, but he didn't think the guy had any ill will and stuff. And he was invited on to Saturday Night Live the next week. He was actually a guest on that and on that Weekend Update. And the follow-up skit to it is super fucking funny because he's making fun of Pete Davidson. And at some point, his Dan Crenshaw's phone rings and it's an Ariana Grande song, which is Pete Davidson's former girlfriend. They'd just broken up. And so like, Dan Crenshaw got him back with humor and took it light enough and could take the ribbing, and he didn't just respond with emotion. And so one of the things I took away from that book was a great lesson for this whole topic is, how do we do this? And his advice is, just fucking pause, breathe. Everything doesn't need a response. Twitter doesn't need to know your thoughts on everything right when they happen. Like, the world doesn't need to know your angry tirade thoughts on something. I'm thinking of somebody in particular when I think of that. And I try to do that as well. There's a lot of shit that pisses me off on a daily basis. And one of the things I've had to be very careful about is going on to Instagram and things like that, because I have business accounts on there and ranting about stuff that is occurring. And it could even be something simple just related to dog training. And early on, I think I was way more apt to be way more emotionally motivated in some of my posts when it comes to dog training specific stuff. And maybe it's because I'm older. Maybe it's because life has slowed me down. Maybe it's because I hurt myself this last year. I don't really know. But I don't feel the need to all the time be like, fuck those people, you know, like the South Park episode, they took our jobs, they took our job. Like, everybody knows that. It's a fucking hilarious, because I just think of that all the time, where it's like, I see this thing and I need to have a reaction to it. But even more, I need to let the damn world know what my reaction is to it. And so that idea of just like, slow the fuck down, process this stuff, maybe look at all these things and think that like, maybe somebody like Pete Davidson didn't really have evil intent when he did that thing towards him, and was actually a pretty nice guy about it in the hindsight, and was allowed to make a mistake, have some grace, apologize for it. Dan went on there, busted his balls a little bit, and then they just moved on with life. And I don't know, man, like, what are your thoughts on all that?
No, it doesn't have to be a thing, right? You know, and for me, it's to talk less and to think more. It's to not respond when I'm emotionally charged, whether I'm sad or mad, regardless of the emotion. You know, I've said it at least twice. It's perspective. And, you know, when you make the point, you know, of describing Dan, and it's probably no surprise what side of the fence he lands on. I'm finding myself taking issue with comments like that more and more, in the sense of, I don't think there's two sides. I don't think there's a fence and you're on this side or that side of the fence. I think you use like a football field, and you could be standing on the 50-yard line and you have goalposts on either side. And that's where the majority of people are. And they get a handful of assholes on both sides that are on the outside of those goalposts, right?
Fucking Raider Nation.
Right. You know, those, yeah. And those are,
sorry, Raider fans, but you know, you're all fucking felons. I'm saying it.
You know, and then you have the fucking, you know, you got the fucking monkeys throwing shit, right, in the cages. And it's difficult, you know, okay, like an example of like, if you get cut off, right? Oh, that motherfucker, he cut me off. And, you know, what is it? Why does it have anything to do with you? Maybe the fucking person was being dumb and they're looking at their phone and they're being selfish and you know, using a cell phone while driving and being, you know, having disregard for those other people on the road. And they cut you off without even realizing it. But it's about you and it's about that person. And now you're battling that person. I need to speed up and I need to flip them off. I need to tell them they're a fucking idiot and they don't know how to drive. And it's just like, when the fuck did it become about you? And I was that guy for the longest time. And now I literally laugh. When someone cuts me off, I just like, what the fuck? You had no idea I was here. I'm giving the benefit of the doubt.
until you pull it to me next thing and you go like, yeah, I did try to cut you off, motherfucker, I want to fight you. Okay, well then I will respond accordingly when you escalate the situation to that extent. But to not default to that flight or fight response, like it's hard, you know? So for me, having difficult conversations with my wife on and what to do with her mom recovering from colon cancer and having her colon rupture and going septic and all kinds of other, you almost losing her, to her dad having a heart attack, you know, to my mom being immune compromised, all her medical issues. Like, I'm living in a lot of these statistical outliers that we're trying to navigate. And also while having a young child, trying to figure that out and having a business and my wife needing, you know, both of us needing to work, you know, it's not easy. And I don't want to underplay it, but it's not fucking impossible. And you don't have to be at odds with everyone to do what's right for you and your family. So for me, it's perspective. It's having conversations. It's being okay with someone not agreeing with me. It's also being okay with the solution to my problems are incredibly fucking difficult at times. It was not easy to get my parents' stuff initially. You know, my dad was 100% against Amazon and having food delivery services and things like that. Fortunately, I've been able to get them on board with some of those things, which is ensure that they're eating, you know, and having the things that they need to, and access to resources and stores, supply chain issues have been able to self-correct. But I wasn't mad at the world. I wasn't trying to get someone else to solve that fucking problem for me. This is my family. These are the people that I care about. And I'm going to do what I need to do to resolve it. So I would say, you know, take stock and personal responsibility, you know, maintain perspective, have conversations, partner up with those around you that you can trust to help you navigate these complex times. Not necessarily going to give you, they're not just going to reinforce the anger or the frustration or the feeling that you have towards a certain thing, you know, but they're going to work towards getting a resolution instead of crying about, you know, symptoms of a much bigger problem. I don't know if that's a good answer, but those are the things that I've deployed.
Yeah. This is one of those things that's like, I don't think there's any good or bad answer. I think the answer that wouldn't get people the farthest would be somebody's going to save you, a victim mentality. We'll go into that in further podcasts, I'm sure, about those type of mindset type things. But sitting back and being weak through all of this, look at it and go, sometimes trying to see other people's sides, just understanding, back up, understanding that there is another side to things. I don't know that I can truly ever understand the mindset that would come from, I don't want people to feel the sting of never losing, you know, like I can't put myself in those shoes. I can think about what it would try to be like to have a child come out that was gay. How would I navigate that? I can put myself in certain like mental situations, go, how would I face this adversity or challenge or thing that's thrown at me? But I can't ever put myself in that frame of mind to go like, what does this person that views the world that way, how do they truly see that stuff? I don't understand that viewpoint. But I can also understand that I don't understand that viewpoint. And I can try to at least listen to them. And I can try to hear where they're coming from and try to then go, okay, so for the folks out there that feel that way, I have to understand what creates that and what a lack of adversity in life does to folks that now that they're facing, we're all combined facing this adversity of a pandemic. Why are they responding the way they are? Why is that lady that posted on my cousin's post, why is she that frightened of this? I get it. She has a child that is dealing with a deficiency, a very rare, disease. It's a genetic disorder because my cousin's son also has it. That's what their common thing is. I don't know what that's like. I see my cousin struggle with that, and that must be really frightening. And I can understand that. And so when I see somebody spout that type of emotion and write it all out, time after time after time, replying to all the things I put on there, I get like, you're coming from a place that I can't understand. So what was better for me was to go, I can't keep smacking that hornet's nest because the hornets are going to keep coming out. That's requires more from me to disengage from that and go, I don't understand her position. It's coming from a highly emotionally triggered space. And so the best that I can do is to step out of that and not give her something to continue to have to have an emotional response to. I'm the other side of the equation. So the best thing for me was to navigate out of that. Yeah, man. It's like such a heavy topic for that, because it kind of encompasses, I mean, we stayed away from the political stuff too, but, and there's really, I think everybody knows where all that stands. I think we're going to navigate through that over the coming months. It is what it is. Whether you liked the Donald or not, we're done. His 4 years are up. That's the great thing about it. You watch that lady fall apart 4 years ago and go like, really? You can't just ride it out for four years. Like in 4 years, if you don't like it, you can vote him out, which happened.
Right.
And here we are. And I don't know whether they're going to like this guy or not. There's plenty of people that don't. And so, hey, you know what? In 4 years, we get to fucking try again.
Well, regardless of liking someone, you should hope that they have the best result.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still Team USA. I'm still a citizen here.
Yeah.
You know, I got a kid that's grown up in this country.
Yeah.
I don't want you to fucking fail.
Right.
You know, I don't want people to struggle with COVID. I don't want people to struggle with, you know, self-esteem issues and things like that. No matter how much I want those things, I can't force people to care. I can't force people to take action. I can just be there.
Yeah.
I can be there when I'm available, if it makes sense, if you hit me at the right time in my life, because I got my own bullshit too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the hard part, is it's always evolving. You know, I can have a great day at work. I'm sure no problem. Let's have the conversation. I can have a shit day, lose an account.
Yeah.
And I'm struggling to figure out how to pay for my employees. And I'm sorry that I don't fucking care about what seems to be a big issue to you. Yeah. It's not a reflection of our relationship, you know? So it's...
Are you saying that directly? You looked right at me when you said that.
Okay. Well, I can't see the sign anymore. That's not a joke. Yeah. But no, it's, you know, it's hard. And it's just... take everything with a grain of salt. You know, judge people off a series of actions and not just one. You know, we all have good days. We all have bad days. You know, and if... you ends up realizing that you have more shitty interactions with someone than positive, then maybe that's not the right relationship or the right fit. Yeah. You know, and if you continue to find that to be true, then maybe you need to do some self-exploration.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, consistency is key.
Yeah. And I think to just wrap it up, really, I think what we're trying to say is everybody just chill the fuck out. You know, like, I love that scene from Pulp Fiction where he's like, tell that bitch to be cool. Be cool. No, tell her, but tell that bitch to be cool. You know, like, not to be derogatory towards women, but she was highly emotional and everybody needed to chill the fuck out. That was a highly tense standoff situation. And I think in just, if we want to take a movie scene and go like, that might be where America is right now. We all got shit pointed at each other and everybody's got an itchy trigger finger and we're all fucking hyper. And it's like, we need Samuel L. Jackson saying, tell that bitch to be cool.
Yeah.
And we all take a step back and look what happened. They got their shit. They all walked out. Everybody was cool, right? Everybody exited that situation with as winning of a situation as you could possibly have. And I think if we can all take a step back and listen to Samuel L. Jackson, we'll all be better cool. Off. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll catch you guys on the next one. We really appreciate you spending time with us. Here we are a little over an hour again, and we promise to keep them at that. So thanks for joining this episode. We'll catch you on the next one.
Be cool.